Even as children, we know there is a veil. We know that every figure does not throw a shadow and that every creature does not draw breath. We know that some catch moonlight as sunshine and the dawn is their nightfall. We know this because we have not yet been tricked to believe otherwise. And we still trust the whispered signals of the dark. We know that simply because we do not see something does not mean it is not there. And now, right now, on Snap Judgment, we will close our eyes and wait, because Snap Judgment proudly presents Sight Unseen. Amazing stories from real people who know full well that someone else is there. Featuring classic Snap Judgment stories of the season as part of our countdown to the all-new Spooked 7. Listen when I tell you, turn on the lights, lock all the doors, and do not, under any circumstances, listen alone. Because you're listening to Snap Judgment. Now, for our first story. Leia Acosta was a tenacious young woman with a fetish for old, crumbling homes. Snap Judgment.
My name is Leia, and I'd always had a thing for old houses. I was 22 and bulletproof at the time, and so, long story short, I ended up buying my first house. This one, it was a 6,000 square foot brick Victorian. It looked so miserable. It was literally like a time warp walking back into that house. Everything was as you might have found it in 1901, except for the fact that it was falling to pieces. It had a very distinctly empty feeling throughout the majority of the house, except in what was the servants' quarters. On my very first tour of the house, once I walked into the servants' quarters, there was no question in my mind that there was somebody right around the corner in that room. And so, while still standing outside the room, I just said I wasn't there to cause problems and I didn't want them to run away, but that I would appreciate not being frightened out of my skin, thank you very much. And please do not let me see you, because that's what freaks me out. I just kind of got a sense of peace that was like a breath of air that said, oh, okay. I really felt like it wanted to take care of the house, and that's why it had stuck around. We started calling it a she, and she was always amazingly considerate. Very early on, my family members started having occurrences. At night, they would hear slippered footsteps and the door would open to their bedroom and somebody literally asked them if they had enough blankets.
Or are you warm enough?
And you would hear the skirts rustling. And these doors, there was no way to just push a door open. You had to turn the handle all the way and then you had to push it open. They had a very distinct catch to them. So on innumerable occasions, there were people that asked, you know, did you come into my room last night? And it was always, no, it wasn't me. Now, when we would hear her on the stairwell that was the servants' quarters stairwell, we would hear shoes, the clicking. But if she was on the main staircase, it was a softer footfall. And I discovered that servants were required to wear soft slippers on the main stairs so as not to scratch the finer woods. I started to have more and more experiences with her in the kitchen. I've always enjoyed cooking, but I was confronted by a situation in that kitchen because I had about a 150-year-old wooden cook stove, and it just confounded me. And I was just really sort of bent on the idea of learning how to use it, because my great-grandmother had, so why couldn't I? And so I got it into my head to bake a pie one day, and I tried to get the temperature up on the oven part to be sufficient to be able to make a pie. And no matter how much wood I stuffed into the box, I couldn't get the temperature to come up. And that's when I first heard the sound that I came to really associate with the spirit that we later came to call Annabelle. She would tisk and hiss, sort of like a clucking old mother. It would sound something like... So she would tisk and sigh when she was just completely aggravated with your obvious ignorance. And so I heard the tisk and the sigh. And I was so frustrated with the stove at the time, I just didn't really care. So I kind of stomped my foot and said, "What? If you've got something to say, say it." And I very distinctly heard, "Pull that lever." And I stomped my foot again and I said, "No, I'm not going to pull that lever. I tried that a minute ago," and it just killed the fire completely. And so I hear again and just pull the lever. So, figuring, fine, I'll fill the room with smoke just to prove you wrong. I went ahead and pulled the lever and the temperature shot straight up. Apparently, I hadn't pulled it at the proper time. And then she proceeded to teach me how to make a proper pie crust. Those are the kind of things that happened in my kitchen on a fairly regular basis. I think she was utterly astounded that I had ever found anybody to marry me because I was obviously completely incompetent as a woman. But she took me under her wing to a degree and helped me fill those areas where I was so obviously weak. Of course, I wanted to know as much about the history of the house as I could. We also found some documents, literally, underneath the floorboards in the attic that indicated that it had been built by the man who owned the brick factory in town, and he had alcohol problems and died fairly young. The mother also had passed away fairly young. He had all but bankrupted the family before he passed, and now with the mother being gone, the girls and apparently their nanny, they had the house over their heads but no way to support it. We found out that they were running a car polishing business. But rumor had it, it was a rather notorious cat house for that same time period. So left to their own devices, and that was about the only way they could make a living. And so it became part of our story that maybe she had been the nanny when they were young and then became the madam after the fact. One of the very last rooms that we renovated was the stairwell going up to the servants' quarters. There was wallpaper in that stairwell that had an odd brown mark every other step at about shoulder height. If a person was walking up the stairs with some sort of wound on their shoulder and leaning against the stair every time that footfall hit, they would leave a smudge on the wall there, and that's exactly what it looked like. Every mark was the same as the next with a sort of streakiness. You had asked if I had ever been afraid around her. One occasion, and it was literally one occasion out of the 9.5 years that I was there. I rounded the corner leaving the kitchen and encountered what I had come to be familiar with as her presence. But behind that presence, I felt something completely different. And it was dark and it was not pleasant. And it was the first time she had ever addressed me without that sort of tisk, sigh, here's what you're doing wrong kind of thing. She said, "Turn around and get out of here. It's not right." And so I hightailed it out of there up to her room. You know, I closed the door behind me. There was no way that I was coming out of that room until I got the all clear from her. And that didn't come till the next morning. I got the distinct gut impression that it had something to do with whatever had caused those marks on that wall. As the renovations on the house were becoming more and more complete, and as it started to look like the home that she remembered it being, her presence became more and more infrequent. She just didn't feel the need to come around quite as much. And besides, I'd learned how to use the stove.
I'll never understand how some folks see the ghosts and never run away, but I appreciate Leah Acosta for sharing her story Let's go ahead as well and give a shout out to Miss Annabelle, the nanny turned madam, perhaps the most gracious spirit ever featured on the Snap Judgment podcast. And huge thanks as well to Lane Ember and Estelle Martinson for the trials and spirits they dealt with to bring us this story. On our website, we're going to have Annabelle's pie crust recipe. Original sound design was by David Kim, and that story was produced by Rita Daniels. Now, I am not alone. It is not just me. Everyone I know has a ghost story that they keep in the family. Well, our next family, they take it to a whole new level. Snap Judgment.
I'm Kathleen McConnell. I live in Louisville, Kentucky. I am a certified professional secretary. I have been the executive secretary for the presidents of three different corporations in my career.
In 1966, Kathleen McConnell would take the bus every day to one of her earliest secretary jobs at a bank in downtown Louisville. She would pass an old brick house.
The house just had a draw for me. And I could always see this little girl standing in the front window. She appeared to be 10, 11 years old. She would always hold her hand up to the window glass, and I would do the same thing. I thought she was waving at the bus, and I would just hold my hand up to the glass on the bus.
5 years later, Kathleen and her husband were looking to move, and they ended up buying that old brick house. They moved in with their four children, including their 8-month-old baby, Duncan.
Well, the first night was uneventful. But the second night, we'd gone to bed a little after 1 o'clock. It was like thunder in the house. Boom, boom, boom. And that's just exactly the way it sounded. And I woke up instantly, but I'm thinking, did I dream that or did I hear that? And then it happened again. Boom, boom. My husband said, "Did you hear that?" I said, "Well, of course I heard that. What do you think it is?" And he said, "I don't know, but I'm going to find out." So he slips out of bed, pulls his trousers on, and he gets a handgun that he keeps under the mattress. I think, well, it can't be burglars. Burglars try to keep quiet if they're going to break into a house. So I got out of bed, and I walked down the same hallway to the landing of the steps. And George is standing there, frozen in the spot, and just watching the front door entry. And the inner doors of the house were opening wide and banging against the wall and closing, and opening again and banging the walls and closing. You could see that the outer doors, they were double doors inside and out, but the outer doors were latched down. And then finally it quit. And George and I stood there, and then stoically we just walked back to the bedroom. Didn't say another word. Got into bed. And I lay awake all night, and he went right back to sleep. And I thought, there's no way I'm going to sleep tonight. Something's going on in this house. There's no explanation, but you know it's obvious. You know there's somebody else in your house that you can't see. I knew we'd moved in to a haunted house. The next day, I knew what I had to do, so I went from room to room, asking whoever was there not to hurt my family, not to hurt my children. If they didn't want us there, we wouldn't be there. But we had just sold everything we owned and bought this house. So if there was any way we could live together, we needed to do that. Had anybody seen me, I'd have been carried out with a butterfly net because I could see myself and the insanity of it.
Throughout the day, she tried to piece together what she knew of this puzzle. She thought of a conversation she'd had earlier with her husband.
That morning, when George came downstairs, he said, "Did you bring my shoes downstairs?" And I said, "Well, no." And he said, "I can't find my shoes." And he said, "Well, I'll wear something else this morning, but while you're picking up the house, see if you can find my shoes." So I said, "Okay." Well, as I sat there folding diapers, I knew I had yet to go down in the basement, into the cellar. It was a cellar. You had to go outside to get into it. I opened this big, heavy cellar door, and it did allow a little light into the room. It was just a big, big dark room. It had one light bulb in the center with a chain on it. I stepped on something squishy. I thought, oh, geez, it's an animal. There's an animal in this cellar. And so I pulled the chain down and looked to see what I had stepped on. And there was George's shoes. I mean, I jumped so fast, I think I missed all the steps and ran back into the kitchen. Realizing then that whomever was in this house, it had to be children. Only children would play a prank like that, because that's a childish prank. They moved the shoes, took them to the cellar. So I sat there a little bit, and then I was elated, really. But that was the first, last, and only time I was ever scared in that house, was before I found out who and what was in it.
She ended up thinking it was most likely a group of kids. Sometimes she felt like there was a baby. Bottles would go missing, toy balls rolled around the floor. Other times, she says it sounded more like a teenager playing basketball in the attic. And she was pretty sure that that girl she used to see in the window was one of these spirit children.
Well, I came to know that there were three children in the house. There was a baby. I never did know how old, but I knew it was a toddler. There was a little girl about 10 or 11, and there was a young boy about 13, 14. When you're a mother, and you're already mothering four children, and you realize there's another youngster in your house, it's kind of just instinctive that you're going to mother these other children. As the days went on, I would be scolding sometimes, and sometimes I would just be mother. I thought they would come and take me away if they saw me talking to someone that I really wasn't sure was there. The first Christmas we were in the house, I know how ridiculous this sounds, I did buy Christmas presents for these three children. I bought the little girl a makeup case, and I bought perfume that was called Heaven Scent. The baby, the little receiving blanket.
And she bought the one she thought was a boy, a Nerf basketball set, hoping the loud bouncing sound she heard in the attic would quiet down.
Because I thought if he's going to continue to play basketball, he doesn't need to make all that racket.
She brought the gifts, along with a little ceramic Christmas tree, up to the attic.
And so I asked them all to come around me, and I could feel the warmth. It was no longer cold, and I just kind of made it in my mind that they had warmed up to me. And so the air was warm. And I gave each one of them their gift, and I set the little yellow blanket beside me, opened it up and flipped it out, and explained it, you know, Duncan has one like this. And as I sat there, I could see the yellow of the little receiving blanket crumple up. So I knew either the baby was crawling on the blanket or the children were sitting on the blanket. But either way, I talked to them and told them about the gifts and about how you play the Nerf basketball. I had one critic to tell me that my story was toothachingly sweet. And she did not believe for 1 minute that I bought Christmas gifts for these children. And I said, well, I didn't tell the story for your benefit.
And then there were times when she thought these spirit children were protecting her own baby.
One evening, I left Duncan in the bathtub, in the upstairs bathroom, while I walked out to the nursery to get Duncan's pajamas. While I'm coming back, this is a deep clawfoot tub, and the water was just pouring into the bathtub like maybe he held on to the faucets and he turned them on higher.
She says she sees both faucets on full steam, filling the tub higher and higher.
But by the time I got in there, Duncan is suspended. He is being held above the water. The water is still rushing into the bathtub. I instantly grabbed my baby, but he is suspended above this water. I knew one of the children was holding Duncan above the water. I went into the bedroom, laid Duncan on the bed, and started drying him off, and I'm still a nervous wreck. I'm shaking all over because I feared for my baby. I could see he would have drowned. And then all at once, the smell of heaven sent was around me. Heaven sent is the perfume I gave the little girl. And all I could do was wrap him in a towel and thank them. I just, thank you, thank you, thank you, you saved my baby.
For the next 5 years, Kathleen acted like a mom to what she called her spirit children in the old brick house. And then Kathleen's mother got sick, and her mom lived out of town and alone.
I knew I needed to take care of my mother. I needed to be next to my mother. We had to move. We had to move. My mother was not well, and I had to have a talk with the children. I think it was the day before we were moving. I had gone up to tell them we had to leave. I always had the meeting place in the attic. I was very emotional, just really trying to get their acceptance and comfort them at the same time. And then just out of the blue, this Nerf ball hits me square in the head. And it was like, it'll be okay, it'll be okay. I had to laugh because the Nerf ball just came flying through the attic and hit me square in the head. The morning we were going to, the actual last morning, I had gone through the house and explained everything. And as I did, I heard someone crying. I heard some soft sobs, just soft sobs. And it was like looking through water or looking through smoke. It was the first time that I actually saw these children. The little girl, she was a very pretty little girl. She had the baby on her hip. She had a white nightgown on, and the baby looked like the Gerber baby almost, little chubby cheeks, and he had a bottle in his mouth and little blonde hair. And the little boy was slender, a little over 5 feet, looked like something out of a Charles Dickens novel, actually, because of the way he was dressed. It was good. It was just good that I was able to see all of them that one morning. People tend to think, if you have an experience like this, you're either a liar or you're a crackpot. I'm here to tell you, there's more in the world than what you can see. I know what happened in that house. And all I can say is, keep an open mind. Just keep an open mind. There's more in the world than what you can see.
Big thanks to Kathleen McConnell for sharing that story with the Snap. You can find a link to her book, Don't Call Them Ghosts, on our website, snapjudgment.org. The original sound design was by Leon Morimoto, and that story was produced by Anna Sussman. When Snap Judgment returns, sometimes a car can have a mind of its own. When the Snap Judgment Sight Unseen episode continues, stay tuned. Welcome back to Snap Judgment, the Sight Unseen episode. I'm your host, Glenn Washington, and today, what you see is absolutely not what you get. From time immemorial, the ancient have tried to infuse a bit of the soul into inanimate objects, a staff, a book, even a wand. They would fast for days, self-flagellate, and lay prostrate before the object. What they learned is that the object would either take the gift of self or it won't. Snap Judgment.
So Aunt Janice had a very interesting reputation in her family, and that was because she may have been inherently evil. She moved out to Los Angeles early on in her life because she wanted to be a movie star, and she was quite beautiful. Things did work out for her for a while, except for her husband left her for his secretary, and it crushed her. Her husband, of course, was a divorce lawyer. He took everything, and she had to move back to Michigan. And she became bitter. She was just like this perfect storm of craziness at all of our family get-togethers. And she would refuse to eat anything. She would just mix vodka with Ensure. On her deathbed after she got throat cancer, if she deemed that the hospice nurse was too fat, she would reach over and with what little strength her little anorexic arms had, she would slap them across the face. When my great aunt died, she had a Dodge Shadow, and the family decided that it was going to me. I could not get this weird smell out of it. It was like death and cigarettes, but I was fine with that because the car was free. I had decided that I wanted to move across the country from Michigan to Los Angeles, and that's when things started to go kind of crazy with this car. And I remember the first time it happened, I was driving down Lancashire Boulevard into Hollywood. I tried to brake. I lifted my foot off the gas pedal, and I could feel the gas pedal not coming with me. Instead, the gas pedal started wedging itself down. My foot was nowhere near it, and I started pumping the brakes, but it wouldn't work. And so I was watching the speedometer go up to like 45, and I'm on like a residential street, and I started freaking out, and I was like, what is gonna happen? Stop, please stop. And I realized that when I said stop, it stopped. And then it started happening more, and it would happen on the highway. And it was the same thing. The steering wheel wouldn't turn, brakes weren't working. When I verbally asked this thing to stop, it stopped. That's when I started feeling like, oh my God. And I know this sounds crazy, but maybe Aunt Janice was in the car and did not like that I was back in Los Angeles. I took the car to a few mechanics. And they would do all of these tests, and nothing ever showed up on the car. But the second that I would get the car back, I would drive it home, and it would happen again. What got really scary was I was driving, it was really close to the Hollywood Forever Cemetery, and I could feel something behind me pushing my head into the steering wheel. It wasn't like a hand, it was almost like there was this cushion of air that was just pushing me. And so it was so bad that I could not move my head. And I actually had to pull off to the side of the road. And even then, when it allowed me to move my head up, that made me shake my head back and forth. I started talking to Aunt Janice and appealing to her in things that I thought that she would be interested in. I know that she really loved certain movies, like she loved The Omen. And so I would talk to her about like the time that Gregory Peck gets his head taken off. That was her favorite part of the movie. Almost like appeasing the gods. When things really started to go awry is when she would follow me into work. My boss had called us into a meeting, and she said before we could leave for the day, we had to find this one picture. It had to be in one of these 100 giant books, and we would have to thumb through all of them. While that was happening, I could feel Aunt Janice pushing my head into my boss's desk, and I was not able to fight back. So in the middle of this meeting, my head is slowly lowering itself, and everyone's just kind of looking at me. And the only thing that I can think to say is, I have a really bad migraine. And so I said, if you can help me find this picture, I swear I will think about selling the car, and also I will think about moving out of LA. My head shot up, I stood up, and it felt like something was pushing my body. And so I just let go. And I went to the shelf and I picked up this one book and I opened it up and there was this picture that we were looking for. I could not handle the responsibility of selling a ghost car to a stranger. And I decided that I would donate it to a charity for the blind. When I got rid of the ghost car, my life improved drastically. And one of the things that happened is I immediately had a dream. And this dream was so vivid. And this dream said, I was going to get a red Honda Civic HX. I didn't even know an HX existed. And I went on Craigslist and I was just like, well, I guess I'm just going to post an ad saying that I need a red Honda Civic HX 1997. The next day, a woman called me and said, I have your exact car. I've had this Honda Civic through many states. I've just recently even driven it across the country twice again. And now, okay, so I moved to Portland, Oregon not too long ago, and I'm on the way to the studio today, obviously, to tell this story about a car. And as I'm thinking about this car and all of the stuff, and I'm on my way to the studio, what I don't realize is that the light in front of me is turning red. And I actually flew through the light and T-boned someone in a white truck.
My name is Dave Gillum. I was pretty shook.
And he was shaking.
When I finally got my wits about me,
the first thing he said to me was,
it's quite a coincidence. 6 years earlier,
to the day,
I was driving the other direction and somebody came to the same light.
Same intersection.
Light turned green, looked both ways, went into the intersection, and boom, I got T-bone on the driver's side.
Hit in the same way.
By someone running a red light that day, too. Both times my vehicle had been totaled, and both times I was driving Fords, and both times it was pretty young women that did it.
Okay, I have been, here's the thing, like, Aunt Janice hasn't left me still. Like, there are still moments where things happen where I realize I need to make some sort of different life decision. It's like, sometimes she'll just come back, and I don't know why, but there's a chance that maybe I should not be living in Portland, Oregon.
Understand, Snap, does this really happen? And driving to the studio to tell her story, to tell it to us, April Wolf's car was seized by a malevolent force and crashed into a man with better ways to spend his day. Thankfully, everyone was okay. Thank you, April Wolf. The original sound design for that piece was by Leon Morimoto, and it was produced by Stephanie Fu. Snappers, understand, nobody loves the season of mystery like Snap Judgment does. We're coming to you with 4 Snap Spooked classic remixes, including The Hounds of Hell and Welcome to the Dollhouse, 4 only on this podcast, not broadcast on the radio, nowhere, nothing, only here, all this before dropping the brand new Spooked 7. Want a little preview? Want a little taste of the upcoming Spooked 7? Here goes. Be afraid.